Well, this is weird. Well, come on, we're all thinking it.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, BH90210 edition. Today's episode is Season 1, Episode 1, The Reunion. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave.
It's a whole new world, and yet the same old world.
Hopefully without 33 episodes a season, because oof.
Yeah, I don't know if we should talk about if we just get into the plot first or just do our high level reactions to it. What do you think?
I don't know. Let's do the plot first, and then high level reactions will seep in.
Okay. So here's the plot. We're going to divide this up. Everyone is meeting up in Vegas for a, by the way, very sparsely attended 30th anniversary Beverly Hills 90210 reunion, in the course of which we get caught up on where each of them is in his or her life and the conflict they're presumably going to be dealing with for the rest of the season. So let's run them down in alpha order.
Before we do that, and we'll talk a little bit about this later, but you're seeing, as you presumably know, quote, heightened versions of the actors. And then occasionally there's like, I mean, they start with like a dream sequence at the Peach Pit. Anyway, we'll get into whether or not this meta Moebius works. Mm-hmm. But first, let's see what the meta Moebius is up to. Gabrielle Carteris is the president of the, quote, Actors Guild of America. I'm sure that's going super well on the show, as it
in
is
this
not
universe.
In life. Yeah. She also just became a grandma for the first time, and she feels weird about it. A very cute female bartender hits on her in Vegas, and they smooch. Gabby does not tell her husband, but it is clearly on her mind.
Brian Austin Green is married to an enormously successful pop star, not actor, from the Transformers movies, named Shay. This woman is played by Lala Anthony. They have three very cute daughters, and Brian has put his career, LOL, on hold, LOLOL, to stay home with them. But he feels insecure about his status relative to Shay's. He also, by the end of the episode, has a teen boy stalker that I predict we're going to find out is a son he never knew about and presumably has no plans to support financially.
Some... real big swings taken at these heightened versions of these people. And I'll leave it there for now. Yeah. Moving on to Jenny Garth, who looks fucking amazing, but feels like a failure due to the end of her third marriage. And she's trying to keep a lid on the news getting out, which of course it does because stuff. She tries to cheer herself up by boning Jason Priestley, but it only makes her feel worse, which we could have told her that.
Speaking of Jason Priestley, he is mostly directing TV shows that star cute boys who are basically him 30 years ago and think he's a joke. He has just punched one and injured his wrist before coming to the reunion, which is going to hurt his ability to get financing for an indie film he wants to make, which you can tell he's serious about because he shows up for his con panel in a drapey scarf. He is married to a publicist named Camille, played by Vanessa Lachey, and seems relieved that they haven't had kids, so naturally, when he's about to confess his infidelity to her, she announces that she's pregnant.
Oh, sigh. Tori Spelling cannot get on top of her money problems, which, talk about a meta statement. Things are only going to get worse for her and her gazillion children now that Tori and Nate Spelling the Beans...
I don't hate reality- it.
What's that?
I just said I don't hate it. I think that's kind of funny.
I don't either. Someone is having a little fun on that set. Mm-hmm. Her reality show with her husband, Nate, who is a former NHL star played by Ivan Sergei. That show has been canceled, and Nate will not take a job commentating on hockey for local news because he thinks he should be on network. Tori is also still mega horny for Brian, her long ago ex. LOLOL.
Oh, well, Ian Ziering has a much younger wife named Stacy, who is played by someone I've never heard of or seen before. She's a fitness entrepreneur. He says they have a perfect marriage, so of course she cheats on him while he's at the con and rolls over her phone to start a FaceTime call in the middle of it so that he and everyone else in the cast knows. However, he has yet to tell her he knows.
Because he has to check his prenup first, which, not a bad play, pretty smart. For Steve. And we are breaking alphabetical order to say that Shannon Doherty does not attend the con except by Skype, annoying the rest of the cast by upstaging them with cute baby animals because she's running an animal rescue in India. But at the end of the episode, she is on her way to board a plane back to LA.
So when the episode ends, Tori is watching the original show with her kids. The episode, by the way, is The Green Room, Dylan's debut. And she announces to Jenny that it's time for them to revive the show. I also didn't include this in here because it's so dumb. But when they land from on the plane from Vegas in L.A., they all get arrested because they smashed, mostly Tori, smashed a display case that contained her dress from the spring dance. And so they all get arrested for vandalism, I guess, and theft, I suppose.
Yeah. There's a lot of interminable plane stuff on the way to the con involving them being in coach and Tori not really understanding what it is. Like, none of that is credible, but it happened. And we watched it and now we're done.
Yeah.
Great episode, everybody. Just kidding.
So I have questions and we both have questions. I'll go first. Have Jason Priestley's eyes faded? I don't remember him looking this much like a Siberian husky. His eyes looked like crazy light to me.
They are, yeah, they are very like early Buffy seasons vampire pale.
Yes.
But I suspect that it is just a matter of like how shows are physically shot. Now,
yeah,
I don't think his eyes have gotten any paler. I'm sure there's some Jason Priestley race car accident truther who can tell us that the impact knocked the blue out of his eyes. But I don't think that's he's
got traumatically depigmented. Next question. Is even this fictional Tori dumb enough not only to smash a display case with her old costume dress in it, but to do it on Instagram Live? By the way, the sequence is 5 million years long. This episode, I don't know why it's an hour. It really should have been a half hour. It would have been a lot better, in my opinion.
Yeah, agree. Do we know if this was just like the welcome back, here's everyone, like scene setter, and then the rest of them are half an hour, like Gross Point?
Oh, no.
She said, hopefully.
At least the next one is an hour. I assume they all are.
Hey, well, at least an hour in the 90210-iverse isn't 47 minutes like it used to be. It's like a trim 39. So, but still, yeah, that was long. There's absolutely no way Vegas security didn't see what was about to happen / have someone standing next to it just so that drunk people weren't even accidentally breaking the glass. Yeah,
but again, this goes back to like for a 30th anniversary con, there's like hardly anyone there.
Yeah, the con was also not edited or written very well. Like it was just interminable and they kept having to sort of stop so that Jenny Garth could get quote good lines, which we'll talk about that later. But
right.
It just was really like, you know, none of you is an Olivier, but you could be jumping each other's lines or edited to look like you are. It was just puzzling. Mm-hmm. Well, my question, having covered Tori's reality exploits relatively extensively, is as follows. Didn't actual Tori have the Cleavern repaired like several times? And it was storylines on True Tori and whatnot.
Really?
Because it really, it looks the same and it doesn't look good. There's a couple of dresses where at least they're sort of like, she has a little bit of that Loni Anderson butt chest, but at least there's not like, you know, some cave out of which Vincent Price is going to emerge with a cursed tiki. So yeah, it's not good. I also don't understand how she is not aware and has not been made aware by someone who cares about her of how it looks and how to dress it, because it's not okay.
There's a lot of plastic surgery things happening with her.
Yes.
I will leave it at that rather than be unkind on mic, but I said some things privately while we were watching it.
I think we all agree, and we feel compassion to the extent that we, with our original faces, are able to.
Yeah. I mean, and some of it is makeup. Like, they do the thing that they do to Deborah Messing also, where, like, her lips are outlined way, way outside her actual lip line, and it looks bizarre.
Mm, yeah.
Less a comment than a question, but if they do have a con like this for the 30th anniversary, I will attend no matter where they have it, including if it's on the moon. I don't care. I will go.
Oh, yeah. See you there.
Okay, good.
I mean, we have to. It's work.
Yeah, true. That's right. It's a write-off. Mm-hmm. We do have more to discuss about this episode, but first, we have a message from Tracy. 90210 superfans Tracy and Brandon are celebrating 17 years of marriage. Wow, congratulations. So therefore, awesome. We may safely assume their relationship is happier than the super problematic one we saw for the Tracy and Brandon on the show. In honor of their anniversary, Tracy has asked us to list our top five all-time favorite show couples, and we are happy to oblige in no particular order.
First, Brandon and Susan.
Yeah.
For most of the show's run, Brandon's girlfriends bought into his golden boy image. But when Brandon first met Susan Keats, the new editor of the CU Condor, it was disdain at first sight. We could have done with a few more episodes worth of her thinking he was bullshit and telling him so, but generally, she maintained her badassitude throughout her relationship with him, at least until she took the job. Just kidding. What I actually meant to say was, especially when she took the job.
True.
Always take the job.
Indeed. Number two, Brenda and Dylan. Her Aww. First love, her cutest love, the love that led her to be the most tragically, teenagerishly dramatic. Maybe it's just because we really only ever saw her with two other hunks of beef, Stuart and Reek, very different from Dylan, but Dylan remains the best, the gold standard, RIP Dylan / Luke Perry.
Mm, exactly. Number three, Steve and Celeste. Steve's first multi-episode girlfriend, Celeste, was fun, cute, a talented artist, a real person with a job. In other words, generally too good for Steve in every way, even before he cheated on her with crazy Laura. Plus, her origin story is that she met both Steve and Brandon on a definitely not studs dating show and rejected Brandon and his plum Steve Harvey suit in favor of Steve Sanders. Good instincts, lady.
Number four, Brandon and Nikki. Okay, fine. This is mostly because we like Nikki, and having her date Brandon was the price of keeping her around, which, sadly, also meant she had to get brayed at for daring to ask him how he's doing and abandoned by him at all-ages clubs twice in, like, four episodes. So, yeah. Fine. We stand a 90s boho-style icon, and Brandon is also present.
And number five, Steve and Andrea. Did the show ever go there? No. Should it have? Based on the evidence, yes, maybe producers were always trying to shove the Blaze co-editors together, but whether they were fooling around in Steve's glass-bricked bedroom or just joining forces to exchange an egg, Andrea and Steve had more chemistry than Andrea and Brandon ever did.
From all of us here,
happy anniversary, Tracy and Brandon!
All right, we're going to break down the rest of the episode into categories, starting with Continuity Cop. Why don't you take this one? Because I felt like it was very personal to you.
I really did, too. So Brian and Tori have a, quote, little ritual that they mention because they're, you know, I think mostly Brian is nervous about going on stage for the con. And they talk about how they used to breathe into this little hand tent and then rub their hands together, and the blocking of sort of covering their noses and mouths with their hands to breathe is exactly the blocking that I can't stand. Brian Austin Green has been doing for like 25 years of pressing the bridge of his nose.
Yep.
Oh my God. It's such a troll. And then mm-hmm. I was like, it's obviously a breath check. Hello. And then Tori had a line about that. So I felt extra seen and, you know, / trolled.
But other than that, every detail that they include about the actual original show is dead on. In the opening dream sequence where, you know, it's Donna's having a dream and she's imagining they're all in their characters in the peach pit. And then Brenda comes in and she's like, no, Brenda's in London, which last we heard she is.
Mm-hmm.
Priestley and Garth have an exchange about how many episodes, how many seasons they actually worked together. He remembers how many episodes into season 9 he left, which is accurate. Mm-hmm. Donna's hideous red dress with the hoop skirt is photographed as seen on the show in the spring dance in season 1. Kelly and Jenny both getting burned romantically.
Grown.
And Donna calling Jason Priestley calendar girl. That's
funny. Never forget.
Yeah. So, you know, whoever's writing this, they know their shit. And I was impressed, particularly with the 4 episodes into season 9, because God knows everyone else had checked out by then.
Yeah. And it showed.
So then suspension of disbelief. I already mentioned this, but the actual logistics of the con, like who is there and how excited they are, really vary through the episode. Like when they're all gathered in the lobby checking in, they have to run away like they're the fucking Beatles, which I'm sure was true like back in the day. But then the rest of the time, like after they have paneled, they freely just wander around the hotel where this thing is being held. They're like at the pool, they're in the bar, no one comes up to them. Like I don't get it.
And there's a sort of runner about how the kids today don't recognize them, which I don't think is necessarily accurate. Like I think that these people are just out there in the culture. Mm-hmm. If there's anyone half our age listening to this, first of all, go outside. Second of all, ask your parents. And third of all, let us know, like, is this, are these things that you're aware of? Like the major sort of tentpole events of the show? Do you know who these people are? Like if you were wandering through the lobby of a circus with a meter of beer, for instance, would you be like, oh, hey, that's that guy from that thing?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, the show was on in syndication for 1,000 years and it still is on Hulu. I mean, granted with some episodes missing, but.
And it's on
available.
Pop, I think, a few times a week. And,
yeah, right.
And so, certainly like a hotel, like a front desk clerk at a hotel is not going to be doing this. Like he would be fired for not knowing who a VIP guest is. So,
yep.
That was dumb.
Yeah. Also, suspension of disbelief challenger that anyone would be more excited about seeing Donna's dumb red dress in a case at this con than they would be the black and white mini that Kelly and Brenda both wore to that same spring dance in that episode. Like that's the iconic look. No one cares about the red one.
Yeah. I don't think anyone except us cares about the red one, possibly the mermaid dress from prom 93, but, and the giant crucifix they borrowed from Christ the Redeemer in Rio. I actually had a late addition to this and I just wasn't sure where to put it because it was a dream sequence. But in this dream, like Mr. and Mrs. Silver, and Brandon's being annoying. And I believe he is still not wearing a fucking undershirt under his Peach Pit shirt. Like, dude, no one wants your chest hair in their mega burger. Mm-mm. Maybe that's a secret ingredient. Just kidding. It isn't. It's Swiss cheese. Don't ask how I know that. You don't need to. But Donna and David are like schmooping on each other and he mentions I think they're playing that Jeremy Jordan Turn It Up song that
it might be one of, it's not the one that used to be in the, oh, maybe it is for the one from the credits, I don't recall, but yeah, it's like,
yeah, at least it's not Did You Ever Have to Make Up Your Mind. I still can't stand that song. R.I.P. Dylan. But they're like schmooping on each other and like, oh, do you remember this song? And then David's response is like, of course I remember it. That's why I sampled it for that Jay-Z track.
Yep.
My notes are a string of L-O-L for like 5 lines of notebook paper. I had to pause it. I was like, not even in a dream sequence show.
No. Not even in a twice removed meta situation. No. Like, no.
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 Somewhere Jay-Z is like a word.
Yeah. However, I will note that in that dream sequence, she's wearing a jumper. It's like black with white daisies, and it looks exactly like the print that, I think it's Kate Pearson wears in the Shiny Happy People video. That one that was everywhere. It was extremely 90s.
Yeah. It's cute.
All right, moving on. Speaking of that, Gen X pandering. Really not a lot of that here other than the song choice, except when they're all sad about Luke Perry, because we are too. It's sad.
It is really sad. And they seem legit, like, moved, and mm-hmm. that there was someone missing. And I will add, having just watched a Hallmark movie, one of several, that he did called Love in Paradise, he really sold that foolishness. I talked mm-hmm. about it on Dave and Jeb Aren't Mean, and if it comes up in the Hallmark row and you see it, it's pretty cute. And he totally sells it, and he would have totally sold this. Like, this is a little bit, I don't know, like, I guess I just don't get what it wants to do or who mm-hmm. it thinks it's for its own sake. And the fact that he is absent really makes its mysterious inertia more evident, because yeah. Luke Perry was actually a lot better at this and at having a sense of humor about this kind of shit than
yes.
I think we gave him credit for at the time. So
yeah, I agree. It's weird to imagine, like, because at the time that he passed away, like, they were still putting this together and he hadn't signed on. And the line was, he's not going to because right. of Riverdale. But they shot this in Vancouver, which is also where they shoot that.
And they absolutely would have. He would have done it. And Riverdale yeah. is not dumb and would have let him do it.
Yeah. We'll never know. So moving on to the category we're calling Blondes Mean Girling. Jenny and Tori are, of course, producers on the show. I believe this was all, like, they were the prime movers that made it happen. So our prediction ahead of time was that there would be a lot of them, you know, getting the better material. And I think that's somewhat true, which we'll get to. But here are some instances where there was a little mean girling on their way to the panel. Granted, this is in, quote, heightened character. But Gabrielle's like, let's go. And Jenny asks if she's going to keep doing that teacher clap all weekend, which is a little mean. But also it's like, super is that really mean, how they actually. Think of her? I bet it is.
Yeah. And then, I mean, later, Jenny does the teacher clap herself and is like, oh, this is actually fun. Mm-hmm. Like, all right, fine. Grudging. Yeah.
There's also stuff in here about how hot Jenny Garth still is to 20-something dudes, but I'll allow it because she is hot. Like, I already made Sarah say this. I wrote that rundown up top, but she really looks so good. I was like,
she looks
astonished
good,
how
and
good
she looks.
Looks
appropriate.
Yes.
Like, she's not, I mean, she looks younger, I guess, younger than her age, but she also doesn't look like she's trying too hard. If someone yes. has to wear a tiny backpack, mm-hmm. I hope it's Tori. But yeah, mm-hmm. she just looks normal. Like, she's wearing flattering colors. It's not anything too, you know, she's like, look, I'm wearing a lavender strapless mini. Like, that's not where any of us is. She mm-hmm. just looks great.
Yeah. Yeah, when she raises her eyebrows, like, her forehead moves, it's mm-hmm. all working for her and yeah. me. So I have in here, Jenny gets all the best lines, but she's so much funnier than she ever got to be as Kelly. And we have a compilation of some of those. Clip two, please.
Jen?
You know I'm not a hugger.
So later, man. No? Okay, yes, I might have lost my temper on set, I'll admit it. Violence is never the answer, but suffice it to say, I always stick up for the little guy.
Yeah, himself. Say hi to Aunt Jenny, but I don't care. Think about all the stuff that went down this weekend.
Oh, yeah, I did. And then I ate an edible.
Some of those made me legit laugh, but I sense we are divided on this one.
I agree that she is funnier. But I'm not sure it rises to the level of actual funny at any point. When it does, I think it's because Jason Priestley is allowing himself to be a punchline to a surprising extent.
Yeah.
And I don't think either she or the writing of the heightened version of her has any better awareness of how she's often coming off. Like, that stink face is all over this shit. It didn't give her wrinkles, good for her, but she still is super, you know, is a bitch about it a lot. And I was not, like, I was not a fan of the show, like, putting her putting her in the protagonist seat again. I mean, keeping in mind that we're covering this sort of in parallel to the end season of the original, where she's just the worst all the time.
Yeah.
At least her hair is better. But yeah, like this is a marginal improvement, but I still don't think that she understands how she's coming off. However, that line that she has about the edibles when she's at, quote, Tori's house at the end, and there is a, like, natural flow to their conversation that does make it very believable that it's like, say hi to Aunt Jenny. Do we have a clip of that?
Yeah, that was in the compilation.
Oh, okay. They don't care.
Yeah.
That felt very lived in and like it might actually have happened. So, I'm enjoying seeing what I think is probably close to their actual friendship.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly on Tori's side. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how it progresses as it goes along.
I agree. I like that scene. She comes in. She also opens the door because she's set in a clip that we'll hear in a second. She says something that's kind of like rude about Tori in order to try and like defend her. And then she comes to the door and is like, I'm sorry, I was a dick. Like it's very, it just feels very natural.
Yeah.
And the two of them like are IRL friends and they are business partners. Like they have worked together more than the rest of them. And I feel like their characters are in some respects like closest to what they are really like in real life.
Yeah.
No, and I liked it. I also like that she came in and like after that, they don't care. Like she sits on the couch and then immediately takes her shoes off. Like,
yeah,
this is friendship. This is how it looks.
Yeah.
But I also was not expecting Tori, speaking of her, to be this self-deprecating about what a mess she is. Clip 3.
The show just got canceled. You've milked your brand from every angle. The network says there's no more story.
No more story? Can you believe that? Stuff just keeps happening to me. And just when I think things are slowing down, boom, I fall on a hibachi.
She fell in a hibachi. That really happened. Like,
of course
you can
it
look
did.
It up. It's real.
Of course it did. That reminded me of, we have the shorthand for the snake bit kinds of injuries that only New York Mets players ever get. Dan and I, which is like, what is the most unlikely? Like, well, I was picking yams in my backyard and I stepped on my own hand and broke two fingers. Like this could happen. Someone broke like both his heel bones jumping off a horse. It's it's a thing. So it's very Tory. And that made me laugh.
Yeah.
Sorry, girl.
When they get to the con, she's also furious about how expensive all the merch is and that they don't get a cut, which is reasonable. We hear that in clip 4.
What? Look at that. I can't even pay my bills. And yet that show is still cashing in on our faces.
I don't understand. I mean, your dad produced the show. How did you not get any money?
Welcome to my life. Okay. Now I'm on a dog.
it's not a great line.
And she's like, I would say she's like 50-50 on actually selling funny material. Like, I mean, on the original show, that's like maybe generous. But sometimes she just gets it right. She just throws it away and like, okay, now I'm on a dog. Like, it's one of those instances where it was funny.
Yeah, it was funny. And it's not hurt by the fact that in two fairly famous episodes, one being the Euphoria rave where everyone forgets this, but David got extremely drunk and was like barfing all over everything convincingly. And of course, the Promisode, in which Donna was, I felt, extremely verite while being wasted on champagne with a couple of exceptions. But they're both like doing shots and commiserating and they both know how to act drunk, which is rare.
Why doesn't she have spelling money? That's the question they just glossed over.
Oh, because everyone knows. Everyone watching the show knows why.
Why?
Because she got cut out of the will, basically.
Oh, really?
Kind of a famous story that like she and her mother have been beefing. So
yeah, I was going to say that it's probably more to do with Candy's influence over Big Daddy's probate attorneys than
got it.
Mm.
anything Aaron was thinking of doing. Anyway.
Yeah. So meanwhile, Candy can get a reality show where she's like building a penthouse apartment from scratch and putting in a hot tub on like the 89th floor. And Tori's like selling Little Bites on her Instagram account because that's where she's at. Like, it's, you know, whether people should have inherited wealth is an open question. But the things that she's had to do because she didn't get any is sometimes very grim and sad.
Yeah, it's true.
Speaking of which, let's hear clip five.
How could you grow up with every advantage in life and still struggle to support your kids? It's mind-boggling to me.
Okay, it's not Tor's fault that she lacks basic life skills. I mean, she's not normal. She can't function in a normal environment. It's like letting a zoo animal out into the wild.
Really?
I mean, yeah, kind of.
Yeah. Like, this is a person who didn't even really go to high school, probably. You know, she had show lessons, but presumably never learned how to balance a checkbook, you know, like.
Well, and was in a series of relationships with other celebrity spawns, some of whom were abusive to her.
Right.
So does she have coping skills? No.
Right.
She's still the duckling blundering along after various misshapen beach balls. And it's sad, but she will do it. My only sort of quibble is like, maybe stop after three kids if you can't support them without putting them on camera. But
yeah, they got six kids.
Too late now.
Six kids is a lot.
And so many of them with that slab of moldy Canadian bacon.
It's fucking really Dean. Yeah, Dean, who here is Nate, of course. Like, this isn't a one-to-one comparison, but like, depending on how much of this is based on true events, like, Dean does not come off great in this. He's like really portrayed as shiftless. He does nothing to help her with the household finances. Like, he's the one who's basically forcing her in order to literally pay their bills to do all this super embarrassing stuff.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah.
Well, that's depressing. Moving on. We're going to call this category Hazing the Freshmen. This is just anything notable about the new people brought in to play their spouses and so forth. Oh, poor Lala Anthony being forced to act horny for Brian Austin Green. I hope they paid you well, ma'am.
Oh, God. Seriously. Good luck, girl.
I mean, we see a lot of his body and like whatever. It's fine. But he still has the same voice that he did
Yeah, he's just added a whole bunch of kind of fugazi tattoos, and
he's not sexy.
No,
he's not sexy
because he doesn't support his children. Because
he doesn't support his children.
Not ever getting a lady boner for that guy.
No. Mm-mm.
Hope the show gets into it. No, not hopeful, but maybe.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that it hasn't come up yet, maybe that's where they're going with this son character, who's, you know, I think he's supposed to be a late teen. Perhaps he's analogous to whatever age his kid with Vanessa Marcel is that he doesn't support. But like, I doubt
with a
that.
K.
Yeah, but I doubt I doubt that he is as willing as Tori Spelling, for example, is to like lay bare her real life struggles.
Yeah.
Ugh. I'm also not wild about them casting Vanessa, formerly Manilo, now Lachey, a South Asian woman, to play Jason Priestley's kind of dragon lady-ish wife. That's dodgy.
Yeah. I don't love the, like, I guess you could argue, and this was the intent was to have this like twist on a soap trope by having her be like, you know, first of all, my well-known aversion to, oh, what were you going to say? Nothing, never mind. But also, like, I'm pregnant. We had given up, but it's a miracle that it happened. And there's not going to really be any other discussion about it because we're supposed to be happy. And this is a Fox show, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
I just don't think it was necessary to bring in a pregnancy into this project because...
No.
What? Like, just focus on other shit that he's been doing and heighten that?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess I've just been watching this and various other offshoots and similar shows for so long that it's like, could everyone please just get IUDs so that this trope is like impossible for 5 to 10 years? Thanks. Oh, well.
Yeah. All right. Well, let us close things up by naming our MVP. Pretty sure we're not going to agree on this, but I have a new crush on Jenny Garth, so I'm going to say her. She really did legitimately amuse me in this episode.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to be able to do that. I am going to say, well, shit. I'm actually going to say Jason Priestley.
That's fair.
Because he also has, like, after they do it, and she immediately is like, eep, and starts like storming off with all the covers. And then he has to grab a pillow to cover his Jason-ness.
Mm-hmm.
It, like, he used to do these little bits of business, like in the original. Like, remember when he used to like pick his leg up and then zip out of frame like he was a cartoon mm-hmm. character? It's yeah. sort of like that, but he's like,
yeah.
either I don't hate him as much or he's just better at it now. Like, he just seems to have mm-hmm. a much better sense of humor about himself. I wasn't really bothered by the husky eyes. And I mean, of all of them now, I think I would have to with him.
Yeah.
So him, Jason Priestley.
That's fair. I would love to interview him now and see what his perspective is today yeah. on Brandon as a character.
Yeah. Same.
Like, I would love to know.
Same. Call us, JP.
I'm sure he's listening. Least valuable yeah. player. Brian Austin Green. Hate him. Hate his guts.
That Jay-Z track. Fuck out of here.
We also have something very exciting. The universe has provided this. I bought it last week on eBay. It literally was delivered on Saturday. We're recording this on Monday. It was meant to be. This is from the October 1993 issue of Sassy Magazine, on which Tori Spelling appeared with, look it up on Google, please, super dead eyes for this smile. It's the fakest smile you ever saw. So we're going to be reading through this revival season from Poor Tori by Marianne.
Oh, dear.
Are you famous? The tiny, white-haired, lazy-eyed man at Speedy Car Rental asks me the second I stroll into his Hollywood office. Because everyone here is a star. No, I answer, shaking my head. I can tell he's disappointed. Oh, well, he says, waving me away. Welcome to Hollywood. Why is this in here? I get in yeah. the car and head over to the hotel. I call up Tori Spelling's publicist for the 12th time that day to find out when I'm supposed to meet the elusive star of Beverly Hills 90210. Tori wants to go to the Ivy, her publicist informs me. Of course she
oh,
does.
Oh, girl.
It's a cool, funky kind of restaurant. You'll like it. There are plenty of stars there. Sure are. The it's Ivy is decorated funky, with though. Baskets. Pardon?
It's not funky, though, is it?
Maybe it was then. I mean, now like it's still such a location and like people go there when they want to be papped, basically.
Mm. Yeah.
The Ivy is decorated with baskets and wicker chairs hanging from the ceiling. I ask my foxy waiter for a quiet table, point to my tape recorder, and tell him I'm here to interview Tori. He says in that case, he'll put us in the smoking section. She smokes? Are you sure? I say, yep. 10 minutes later, the publicist arrives. 10 minutes after that, I see Tori making her way in. Ooh, we'll leave it there.
Oh. Next time on Again With This, more of this. We don't really have a
yeah,
proper outro. Yeah, we don't know. Who can say? I'm your co-host, Sarah D. Bunting. I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host, Tara Ariano, is on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Hi. You know what to do after the beeparoonie.